My name is Andrew Stewart, and I am a member of the Rhode Island Media Cooperative. 2016 has proven to be one of the most eventful years in recent memory. One element that is particularly taking up a substantial level of interest is the issue of minority rights. In a year where groups like Black Lives Matter have been making headlines on a weekly basis, it seems that a great level of political activity and attention is being paid Black and Brown people and their votes during this election. In order to better understand this group, I have spent the past year talking with voters across America, asking them about both the election and what they hope to hear talked about the day after they cast their ballot. We now present to you the results of those conversations. Jim Vincent is the president of the Rhode Island NAACP. Jim, the discourse this year has been unlike anything seen before around a presidential election. What are your feelings just on the environment that has been created?
I think it's very sad that we cannot have a discourse without getting into name calling and slander and the like. I would have hoped that America at this point would have matured to a point of being able to have a discussion without having to result to those kinds of negative base kinds of impulses. So I'm disappointed, and I know it's a reality, and I accept it. Let's see what happens. I'm cautiously optimistic for our nation. I'm always in that position, but I think this year, you're right, has really set the bar low in terms of the discourse.
One of the recurring topics over the course of the year has been the Black Lives Matter movement and their development in a direction that is very rapid in terms of ideological and political maturity. What are your thoughts about where they have come over the last few years?
Well, I give them all the credit in terms of articulating the issue of Black lives being lost under some of the most questionable circumstances imaginable. So for them to draw attention to it, I applaud them, because it definitely is something that needed attention to be shown on because of the tragedy of it all. You know, the loss of human life is worse than that, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I hold life to be cherished and valuable and all of that. So, but I think it's like anything else. We have seen, movements in the past that, are primarily led by younger people that have wanted to be heard and felt that things were not happening quick enough. I'm reminded of maybe 60 years ago where you had the SNCC, or the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, that John Lewis played a prominent role in. So, I mean, there's always, in every part of our history, always been organizations that have taken a lead in terms of certain kinds of issues. And I think, the Black Lives Matter movement is kind of reminiscent of that. I can't say that I understand everything that's going on with the movement, because I don't follow it specifically. But I do know it's the issue of Black lives that are being taken needlessly is a major issue in this country, and we have to address it. And that there are people that are really frustrated with the pace of it and what's going on, and the lack of accountability and all of that. So I can sympathize, and I share that concern.
So the NAACP on the national level has had some very interesting statements recently regarding a lot of what we would call bread and butter everyday issues, things that affect Black and Brown people on their daily lives. Are there any things that you think specifically are worth discussing in terms of going on in Rhode Island, maybe after this election?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm always talking about, you know, the how bad conditions are for blacks here in Rhode Island. Just last year, there was a study by, and I'm trying to remember the name of it now. I think it's the Wall Street something. I can't remember exactly, but it said that Rhode Island was the third worst state for blacks to live in the country. And it cited indicators, economic indicators, such as black home ownership is last in the country. Like 30% here in Rhode Island. I think that still is the figure. The biggest gap between white home ownership and black home ownership, 32 points, is here in Rhode Island. So you really can't talk about how it's relative to the white population. It's the largest gap in the country. Our education system is lacking. You know, black achievement, and when you compare it with other states, is below average and perhaps on the bottom. We have a large disparity in terms of people that are incarcerated versus the majority population. I think it's in the top 10 of the country. You can pay a black incarceration rates or white incarceration rates. So that's not something that is something that we should be proud of. So in every aspect of life, things, there's huge disparities here in Rhode Island. I mean, you can talk about health disparities as well. So, I mean, there's not an area where there's not a problem. And I just am very concerned about it. And, you know, we have a young youth unemployment. I was getting ready to say teenage, but I mean youth unemployment, 18 to 24, that is probably at least 40%. And that's a 40%, which is unacceptable. We cannot afford an underclass here in Rhode Island or anywhere else in America. We need everybody to be productive and everybody to be able to realize their full potential. And to the extent that we're not doing our job to make sure that it happens, it's hindering our state. We are all inextricably linked, you know, in this fabric that we are a part of. And so we need to get it right, or else the state is always going to be behind the eight ball.
So I'm wondering what your feelings are regarding education topics that have been in both the local grassroots scene and the national NAACP scene. They just recently had discussion about charter schools. You have a local movement to get ethnic studies put into the curriculum in Providence. The Community Safety Act wants to get rid of what's called the gang list, colloquially, in the school system that puts on a secret list in the school resource officers department, a list of potential or alleged members of different gangs in the high school and junior high systems. What do you think is going to be emerging in the next couple of years?
Well, you know, I think any kind of list, like a gang list, is problematic in terms of, you know, how does one decide who goes on that list and who doesn't? You know, so I think, the criteria is probably questionable, and I haven't really seen it, but I would think that this is a problem area that really needs much deeper discussion. So hopefully there'll be a much more robust you know, discussion about this area, because it can be counterproductive if you have people that are not in the gang scene, you know, put, you know, on a list like that, because it then creates a situation where a person could possibly be profiled or harassed or worse, and we don't want to see any of that happening to anybody. Now, in terms of education, the NAACP is firmly in support of quality public education. And so I think, you know, what we're saying is that anything that diverts resources from public education, needs to be really looked at. We're not in favor of having a dual school system. We firmly believe there can be an excellent public school system, and there needs to be some things in place to make that happen. But we are encouraged by the fact that there has been some movement in terms of certain systems here in the state to kind of improve, and we think that can happen statewide. You know, so I mean, we're mindful of the fact that 40% of the public school students in Rhode Island are people of color, so this is a big issue. It needs to be really, really, really focused in on. So I'm glad that there is some focus on it. And you mentioned something else. What was that third thing?
Ethnic studies.
Ethnic studies. No, yeah, I think they really should be, because you need to have accurate history. And I think, you know, that brings more awareness to people in terms of other groups that traditionally have been left out, left behind in our history books. And we need to understand, you know, the role that all of us have played in history, and they continue to play in the current day. So more education about people that have been seldom mentioned is always going to be a good thing, because you get true history as opposed to something slanted. So, yeah, I'm all in favor of ethnic studies. And I know that over the last 45 years, we've had things like black studies, and it's been helpful.
So are there any things that you want to see either talked about or hope to see brought up more and more often after the election?
The national or the local election, or both?
Either or.
Okay. Well, one thing I would like to see in Rhode Island is we need to have more judges of color. Right now, we virtually have an all-white judiciary. Look, that is not in anybody's best interest. So we need to have more judges of color. I'm willing to, you know, sit down with anybody to make that happen. And I think we're going to see some positive steps in that direction in the next few years. But we need to be mindful that having a virtually all-white judiciary does nobody any good. And I think in terms of the probation and parole bills, or the good justice reinvestment bills that were brought up and that did not pass or did not come up for a vote in the House, I would like to see those bills come up for a vote in the next session and pass, because I think it's really important to reform the judiciary. I mean, not the judiciary, but to reform the criminal justice system here. We have too many people on probation. In Rhode Island, 1 out of 6 black men are on probation. That's a high, extremely high number. That's not doing anybody any good. We need to have people to have second chances so they can be productive and we can add to our society. So those are some immediate things I'd like to see: the reform of the criminal justice system, and also having more diversity in the judiciary, just to name two things.
Are there any reactions you've had to the way that the political discourse has exploded outside the margins in a way that has brought up discussions like systemic problems, like the prison industrial complex, or the issue of past grievances like welfare reform? There was a column written around the time of the Michigan primary by Michelle Alexander, where she really took the Bill Clinton administration to task for a series of policies that had a pretty problematic impact on black and brown communities.
Yes. Well, you know, Bill Clinton, I think, has since apologized for some of those policies. Even he sees the fact that they were harmful and that they really played a role in helping to destroy parts of the black community. So I think he's having hindsight wishes he didn't do some of the things that he did. So I think he's in agreement. And, you know, mass incarceration, you know, it does not help anybody. And it's just a new form of slavery, as Michelle Alexander says, you know. I'm paraphrasing her, what she says. And I just think that's a problem. It doesn't do anybody any good. I mean, we need people to be productive members of society. And I think President Obama, in commuting the life sentences of numbers of people that have committed lesser or minor crimes, I think it was a good move on his part to try to right that injustice. I know that I've been reading about that over the recent weeks. But the thing that I've most disturbed about in the recent days is Donald Trump's appeal to the black community, and how insulting he has been to our community and on a number of levels. One, we know he's not talking to us. He's talking to white suburbia, so that's an insult. And two, he's assuming that we're all criminals and unemployed and subject to be shot every time we come out of a door, and that's insulting too. So I think on a number of levels, what's going to happen is that more people are going to vote against him than there was going to vote against him before he started his rambling.
Understood.
It's going to be an undertaking. Yeah, it's going to cause more turnout. He's not going to get more than 1%, but the resistance is that now more people are going to vote against him. So he probably should have thought that strategy out a little bit more before he came out with it. It was half-baked, and I think it's going to really boomerang on him big time.
Raymond Two Hawks Watson is an African-American and American Indian activist, and he is chief executive officer of the Providence Cultural Equity Initiative.
Ray, you have been involved in American Indian and also African American struggle for a long time now. In the next 4 years, what are the topics that you want to see talked about and dealt with in the political realm?
I think the biggest issue is the issue of fraudulent classification, which is the problem with most so-called African-Americans and American Indians. Many of them are actually what we would call dark Indians, who have been misclassified to statuses that take them out of their quote-unquote human person and put them under the subjugation of the United States government. There's no nation called Black. There's no nation called Africa-America. So when individuals present themselves under these sort of designations, really what they're saying is we're U.S. citizens and we're subject to whatever the U.S. government decides to do with us. So I think the biggest issue is reclassification, and that's the main focus that I'm involved in right now, and then creating sustainable economic development initiatives for these same communities, because you can have all of your information and your history and your culture and all that, but if you can't provide a sustainable life for yourself, a lot of times it can be of very little benefit outside of just personal knowledge. So those are the two things that I'm focused on. Proper classification for individuals who have been misclassified, and then opportunities for productive and positive economic development.
What are policies that on the state and local level you want to see being talked about by policymakers in terms of the American Indian populations and their concerns in Rhode Island?
Sure. So we've actually been working with the Department of Health, Department of Human Services, getting into it with the Department of the State Troopers on developing policies to address these specific things. What we've come to realize is that federally there are policies already in place that take care of the needs that our communities have. But once again, it ties back to the misclassification, because a lot of our people, such as myself, were labeled as Black or African-American, and now I'm doing my history, and I'm finding out that on both sides of my family line, I'm Narragansett, coming down from my grandmother's side and my grandfather's side. On my grandfather's side, my grandfather was Chief George Watson of the tribe in the 80s, and on my grandmother's side, I go all the way back to Chief Bristol Michael, who was chief of the tribe in the late 1800s. And yet on my birth certificate, I am Black. So it all goes back to this misclassification, which is I think the biggest issue, because once people are properly classified, like I've had the opportunity to do in other individuals, you'll find that all of these policies are already in place in terms of healthcare, in terms of education, in terms of all of these things that our communities are looking to access. There's policies already in place that simply because we're not presenting ourselves to be who we are, or we're not asking the right questions because we don't know, we can't take advantage of.
Okay. Are there any other points you would like to bring up in closing?
To anyone that is voting, personally, because of where I'm at and the reclassification, I personally don't vote, but for those who do vote, do not vote with the mindset of it's either this or that, and don't vote based on party. Vote based upon the individual, your respect for them on a personal level, and the issues that they address that affect you personally. I think a lot of times, especially when you're talking about the African-American community, for example, there's a lot of talk about how we have to vote for Hillary so we don't get Trump. But when you look at a lot of the policies that Hillary has supported or endorsed in the past, they're just like what Trump's saying. So we as African-Americans just going and voting Democratic because at least they're not Trump, that doesn't necessarily put that community in its best place. So So I'm saying let's get past all of the partisan stuff that's going on and vote for what's in your best interest and vote for candidates, no matter what party they come from, that reflect your ideals and your interests. I think the two-party system is the biggest issue we have right now if you're talking U.S. politics, and I'm not a fan of it at all.
Thank you for listening today, and please tune in for other episodes of this series as they are released by the Rhode Island Media Cooperative. You can follow along through our Facebook page or on Twitter via @RIMediaCoop.